Welcome to Double Dodge, an explicit Guild Ball podcast where your hosts Cam and Dave talk about Guild Ball and Guild Ball related activity until we're either overtaken by catastrophic global warming or we're bored to death of the subject. We're not the best, but we are the dodgiest. Double Dodge, come join the Magical Pants Party.
Trenton is actually my name, but I find myself balls deep on pretty much anything I do. My ego fits in a little handbag, and I love Double Dodge.
Welcome to episode 2 of Double Dodge. I'm your host, Cam.
And I'm Dave.
And we thought after doing one episode and having some mediocre success that we'd come out with episode 2. We are an explicit Guild Ball podcast sponsored by our good friend Daz from NerdvanaGames.com for all your Guild Ball needs. And this week we thought we'd get on one Mr. Byron Sanchez, Byron the Bear on the forums, and so he's from the Tampa meta, and get him on to have a bit of a chat about a few things. So he is a Butchers slash Union player, but he's also played quite a few different guilds and had a lot of cool things to say. So Dave, you've been chatting to him a bit over Skype. And kind of befriended him and thought, let's get him on and see what he's all about.
Yeah, man. Byron's a dude. We've played a fair bit on Vassal against each other. I am yet to beat him. He is a good player. And I am not so good. But, yeah, he's been really good, like, helping me with some of the finer points of the game. And, man, I always enjoy just hanging out with him in Vassal because he's a fucking awesome dude. So yeah, we've got Byron. We also have a special Carball. We have a tournament day Carball.
Nice
tournament that you run, that you ran the weekend just gone, Campbell. Blessings yep. of the Scumfather.
Indeed. So Blessing of the Scumfather. We ended up getting 8 people up at our local Harlequin Halls. I chose to run it. I'm not a pundit, but we're just trying to kind of grow the community. But I got a lot of help. So there's a big shout out to our local pundit, Tim. He's a champion. He helped me basically run everything, how to use tiebreak, that kind of thing. I mean, with 8 people, it's not rocket science in terms of how the day rolled out. But he was really good. Also a shout out, I know I've already mentioned him, Daryl from NerdvanaGamesSA.com. He basically gave all the prize support. We gave him some money and he then doubled it pretty much in terms of all the prize support. So he's a champion. What we thought would be really good for the tournament was be to make sure that there's plenty of prizes, and so, you know, people want to come and, you know, they don't go away empty-handed. So, yeah.
So everybody got Icy Sponge tokens. Everybody.
Everyone got Icy Sponge tokens. I'm still trying to work out why they invented those things. But anyway, a good episode there. So, we'll throw to that in a sec. I did want to cover a little rules question I had. So speaking of Tim, I annoy him constantly with rules. I'll message him during the day and he'll come up with answers. But there's an interesting one to do with Vet Catalyst and how he's got a playbook with results with multiple outcomes on them. So on his column 3, he's got 1 damage plus an intensifier. And with that, he obviously the intensifier will only affect people suffering from conditions, but he's also got Chemical Frenzy, which does plus 1 damage to playbook damage results when targeting an enemy model suffering from at least 1 condition. So if you assume he charges someone or hits someone with a condition, he's going to do 2 damage plus intensifier, which is 2. And my question to Tim was, well, what happens with a tough hide model? Does it go neg 1 on both those 2s, or do you take the damage as a whole unit of 4 and then take away 1 damage from it? And he threw it out to the Lawyers Guild, I believe, and still, you know, there's a bit of debate kind of raging on. So it'll be interesting to see where we kind of get with that.
I believe. You love that corner case stuff, don't you?
I like seeing certain interactions. It actually came about where I was just looking at what expected damage is. You know, I don't know how you play, but I very much like to know what specific models of mine will do, you know, roughly on average, will do damage in certain situations. So, you know, Decimate, you put 4 on a, generally you can expect 8 damage. You know, it's got Momentous 2 on the 2 and you'll get 4 momentum back. And I think just knowing those things is quite helpful when you play. So I was just trying to work it out, and it was only when I started looking at running into a tough hard model. You know, Catalyst, you can give him 2, charges for free. So say he just hits that third result 3 times, he's tac 8. On a normal model, you're talking 4 damage per attack, so 12 total. Whereas on tough hide, if you rule it the harder way in terms of it goes down to 2 each, you're talking about just 6 damage. So, yeah, I just thought it was an interesting one.
There's nothing worse than being in the middle of a game and just having some rules question pop up, and it just messes with your flow as well. So, you know, kudos to you. Kudos to you for being so proactive. You're doing a community service. Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't. I mean, it's better than the dick pics you were sending him. Thank Christ that's over.
I know.
What a that fucking was sorry saga that was.
Yeah, I know. My wife wasn't impressed.
I know. I mean, I think, like, okay, fair enough. People are going to do that. But putting googly eyes on it, man.
I know. Well, it was a bit of a troll, too, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. Well, on that note, why don't we just throw into... What have we got up first? We got Byron up first, or we got Carball up first? What do you think?
I'm not fussed. I think we'll go with Byron, because Mr. Byron Sanchez is a champ. He got up nice and early for us. So a massive shout-out to him. I think it was 4 a.m. his time to jump on. So we'll go with him first.
All right, and we're also sending him special double dodge thank you package, which consists of a brand new Magic Fuzzy Pants stubby holder.
Yes.
We're gonna throw him a widget as well, you reckon?
We'll throw him a double dodge widget, laser cut by Sean from Jackal Designs. So, yeah, he does them for us. We thought we'd just get some done up for the podcast and maybe chuck some on the double dodge website.
Yes, that's a good idea, Campbell. That's a good idea. I like a potential revenue stream. This is great.
Potential, yeah. We might make $3, yeah. But that, you know, might pay for a coffee.
No, they look nice. I picked up one on the weekend, and, you know, really, really nice looking stuff. So,
yeah, it's awesome stuff.
All right, let's get into this. Byron up first. Let's go.
Hello.
Buenos dias, motherfucker.
Buenos dias. Right. Mucho gusto.
All right, hold on. I'll give him a call now. Calling Byron. Still calling Byron. Byron!
Did you? No, hold on. We're not acting like that. That it happened.
What happened?
I heard like a sexual moan when I came onto this call.
Yeah.
Or did I catch the end of a sentence? Oh. No. Oh, okay.
It was a sexual moan, definitely. So, Byron the Bear Sanchez, thank you for getting up early and joining us. We very much appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it's never early for freedom.
Very nice. So, by way of kicking off this conversation with you, can you maybe introduce yourself and let us know where you hail from?
Okay, well, my name is Byron Sanchez. I go by Byron the Bear on the forums, and I also, funny enough, I go by Byron Sanchez on the Black Orifice ranking system, but they misspelled my name, but we'll get to that later. And I'm from Tampa, Florida.
Tampa, Florida. Yeah, man. So we normally kick off these interviews with 3 questions, and we want to get straight into that. So 3 questions, Byron, put to you. First question is, Do you have anything you'd like to say to Gabe from the Kickoff podcast?
Gabe, that the next tournament that we play in, that I will make sure that whoever's organizing the tournament to make sure we are playing each other in said tournament. Because last time I was accused of dodging him, even though I won the tournament, but I was accused of dodging him.
Yeah, I don't think Gabe handles defeat very well. I mean, if I were throwing around words to describe him, I might use the word brittle.
Maybe, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's why he's taking up the Masons. He's tired of being so brittle.
Yes, well, you know, if you can't beat them, try something that's overpowered and, you know, see how you go. Thanks for that, Byron. That was a good answer. So question two is one from Campbell, and you know, he posed this when we were thinking about the questions we'd asked you. Why are you so bad at taking 4 dice shots on goal?
I have never, ever, maybe once, wait, no, never, have missed 4 dice kick on goal.
Never.
Really? I think I'm making up for your lack of missing 4 dice shots, because I remember little bit of a Vassal game where I was trying to angle for a 5 dice shot and ended up going for a 4 dice based on sound judgment from the other people listening. And naturally I rolled I think it was like a 1-1-2-3 or something of that description. And so,
Oh, wow.
And I have a habit of doing it. I did it again on the weekend. And we had a little tournament, and I reckon I do it about once a week.
So we're pretty much putting that down to you. You're just unlucky for some people, I think. Gabe, you're unlucky for Gabe, obviously.
There's obviously been a lot of 3 dice kicks missed in 2 days, but I don't think I can't remember missing a 4 dice kick.
Mm. Okay, all right. Well, I'm glad we could clear that up. I'm glad we could clear that up. That's important. So the third question is a bit of a comment and then a question. Our mutual friend Quinn Duggan, I just want to sort of bring him into the conversation, and I want to ask whether you'd care to comment on the theory, the prevailing theory within the Guild Ball community, that Quinn Duggan is in fact a member of an ancient reptilian race who's emerged from the center of the hollowed earth to play Guild Ball via Vassal. Would you care to comment on the theory that Quinn Duggan is in fact an ancient lizard man masquerading as a mild-mannered Brit?
I just thought he was drunk when he slurred his S's.
It's his forked tongue. I'm 90% certain. Yeah, because I've never seen him, and you've never seen him. You know?
No. I was more aligned to thinking he was a cat just because of his profile picture.
Right, right. Well, that's classic lizard man behavior. You know, they throw you off with a diversionary tactic like that. Quinn Duggan. That guy makes my blood boil. all right, well, that concludes the quickfire question round. Thank you, Byron. That was very well done. You know, props to you. So I think we want to move away from discussions about Quinn and, you know, ask you about the sort of guilds that you like to play. You know, do you have a main guild? Do you have a couple that you have on the go?
Well, to be honest, I know how to play about 5 guilds.
Mm.
But thanks to Vassal, I'm able to try them all. But I guess I'll just go off when I started the game. I started out with engineers. That's how I learned the game. I realized how shit they were, and I moved to the Union. So I went from the worst team to one of the best teams. And then picked up butchers. I picked up Butchers because our my pundit Dan from the TKO podcast.
Mm-hmm. We like Dan.
He had his Butcher. Yeah. He had his, he was running the tournament, obviously, and this was the tournament right before our first official sanctioned event. So I was like, Dan, let me borrow your Butchers, because I was just fooling around for this tournament. I didn't care about it. And I picked up the Butchers and then ended up taking, I think, second or third place with them. Just on the first try.
Wow.
It's like, oh, I really like this team. And then I picked them up and started playing them Ox Butchers. Let me rephrase that. Like, I'm still learning Fillet. I haven't been playing Fillet. I just picked her up, and it's mainly been Ox is my main man. Mm. And then for Vassal, I just play Corsair Fisherman and the Hunters.
Mm. Mm. Any reason you haven't played Fillet much?
Because I'm not one to join the bandwagon. Ooh. See, when you get to the upper echelon of play, as I have achieved, I don't need to use overpowered captains.
Wow, shots fired. Shots fired.
Can I ask a question there? So that would there's kind of two thoughts on or two styles of captain, as I kind of say. I mean, there's the support style and there's the super solos. So is that an indication then that you prefer the support style captain, or you just basically want the most garbage captain you can roll out and just then grind your opponent into the dust anyway?
Actually, I do like playing the support style of captain, because there are a lot of good superstar captains, but the thing is, like, you just starve the rest of your team, and that's what I find when I'm playing newer people in the game, and they've been, you know, let's say they've been playing Fillet a lot, and they've been playing Fillet, and they're just used to her going in and doing all the work, but the second you take out Fillet, they don't know what to do with the rest of their team.
And that's fair.
I think, and the way I learned the game was with Ballista, a support captain. I'm used to just putting influence on everybody else, and the captain gets next to little unless they actually do something. And that's how Ox works, so that's why I really like him. But yeah, I generally like the support style captain.
Mm-hmm. So you play Union as well. You play Blackheart from memory. Is that right?
Yeah, Blackheart, and then I've been playing Rage, and Rage is really good too.
Right. So how do they fit into your support style of play? Because I know Blackheart he's pretty versatile from what I've seen.
Yeah. So the way. Well, Blackheart, he doesn't fit the description of the support style play too much, but he's just a really good player that can do anything that I need for the most part. The way he supports, though, is obviously getting the commanding aura up. But I try to, like, with Blackheart, I don't try to fight as much. I try to, you know, get the ball and pass it around, do anything to gain momentum with Blackheart. And if I come up on somebody that gutters engaging or decimates engaging, then I'll probably put a couple of shots into him to get commanding aura up, and then let the rest of the team do the damage. But obviously I try to go for the ball first.
Do you find then that Ray, I've played a little bit of Union, and I gravitate towards Veteran Rage, but he is that super solo that, you know, can basically just kill just about anything in an activation. Do you find that's kind of why you err away from him, just because he is that super solo?
Actually, I do not shy away from Vet Rage, because I will play Blackheart or Vet Rage just depending on how I feel that day. I kind of flip-flop between the two captains. You could, like, I understand why people can say, like, he's a superstar, but I think it diminishes it just because the superstar aspect is because he can only hold four influence. Because that's the problem with the superstar. The superstar wants six or however many influence they can hold every single turn. But since Captain Rage can only hold four, it's just like putting four on any other player. So it's not that it doesn't take too much away from the team. That, and he has Red Fury, so even though you loaded him up, he still can command other models to attack for him. So you're still utilizing your players, even though he has the influence.
How many games do you reckon you've been getting in over the last few months? Yeah, because you're always on Vassal. Like, are you averaging like one a day, you'd say?
Maybe one a day. I wouldn't say one a day, because obviously that's not the case. I would get bored. But to be honest, I play multiple times. I'll play, like, days I do play, I'll try to play multiple times, but I couldn't play a game every day because I'm just busy doing other stuff. But I would say, to average it out, I'll probably play 4 to 5 games a week.
Seems like a fair number. Did you want to talk about the Tampa Guild Ball community a bit, and what the competitive scene is like there?
Oh, the competitive scene over there is pretty fierce throughout the Florida area in general. And Amarta Games, which is a store that we play, they hold the tournaments, and obviously we have the locals there, but then we have people from other parts of Florida to come down, and every time we play, there seems to be a new chance. Somebody else is crowned the new winner of the tournament, and last time it's just how it happened to be me. But it's really fierce, and the top players I would say around would be, you know, me, Gabe, Steve, Dan, but he unfortunately doesn't get to play too much because he's running the tournament. And then there's a guy on the rise in Jacksonville called Chase Fincher, and he's been playing Fillet Butchers, he's been wrecking shop. Man. I'm pretty sure in Jacksonville. And whenever
I reckon I watched a YouTube Armada game of you versus Chase. Although I reckon it was you playing engineers. I actually did I googled Byron Sanchez, and I need to confirm whether there's truth in the rumor that the video that first came up was a wrestling one, and whether that was you.
Wrestling? I can't confirm or deny. Any wrestling videos of me?
Okay, yeah. So no, I saw Chase and you play a game. It must have been late last year, November. He was playing looked like a fish lineup versus your engineers. So was that like when you started getting in with the engineers?
Yeah, that was really early in my Go Ball career. I was playing fishermen. I mean, he was playing fishermen. I was playing engineers, and around that time, I was playing just the base six. I didn't even touch junior models at that point. And he was still pretty new to the game, too. So I forgot how that game went, to be honest. It's been so long since I looked at it. I'm pretty sure I won, but I don't remember.
Now, I was going to ask, because obviously you guys get, and as Dave got into, the meta in Florida is pretty big. We've got a very much a virgin kind of community here. We're only starting to get big. We had a tournament on the weekend, which was 8 people. But I was going to ask you about the championships, or the champions format. So have you guys ever played that, where you basically can take in, I know it's only a season 2 thing, where you can take in, you know, a choice of multiple captains into a tournament?
We have yet to dabbled in that. I think just because because we weren't completely sure. I don't think Dan was completely sure of how that worked, because because we didn't know how we wasn't going to know how, say, like having two captains on the roster would work. And or veterans, we didn't know at that point how they worked, or because Well, now it's confirmed that you can have both. You have the veteran model and the regular model on the same team, but on the same roster, but can't be on the field at the same time. So yeah, we didn't know that. So we didn't want to deal with that. So we just cut it at 8, and then most people just pick their one captain and their 6 players and left that at that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting when all the veterans and all the veterans come into the game, you know, and you do have that 9-man roster. I mean, it'll sort of bring in an element of metagaming, I suppose. You know, we saw that in War Machine, but I don't think it'll be quite as bad as, you know, quite as bad the case as it was there in Guild Ball.
Hunters will lose that matchup.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a fair point. Like, you know, are they going to introduce another Season 2 captain, or will we have to wait till Season 3 before that becomes the case?
For me, when I look at the double captain roster, I'm never really scared of the double captain roster. Because I think you guys can agree with me, most captains have, like, a team that you would take the tournament with that captain. And adding another captain and trying to just replace it, thinking it will work just the same, is probably not going to work. The only case that I can think that would actually work would to be the Union, just because of the nature of the Union.
Well, if you're not scared of a two captain roster, what are you scared of? And that can be as narrow as wide as you want, Byron.
Right. what I'm scared of? I'm scared of the Obelisk player, and I'm scared of the Midas player. Those are the only two things I'm scared of.
Okay.
I'm gonna play some more Midas then.
I was hoping you were gonna go with baby stealing alligators at Disney World, but Obelisk and Midas is fair. I mean, we're all scared of him.
Yeah, those are the two. When it comes to Guild Ball, the only two things I'm scared of.
Did you know the family of the baby that was snatched? The baby who was snatched by the alligator. I mean, you know,
No.
Actually, Florida, you know, everybody knows everybody, right?
No, it's actually a pretty big state.
Right,
it's probably bigger than. It's probably along the same size as the UK, as England. So, yeah, we don't know. And even then, we still have trouble getting to tournaments.
Yeah. Speaking of England, it would have been amazing if Quinn was snatched by an alligator, because you've got this whole kind of cannibalism aspect that comes into it. You know, reptile versus reptile. You're practically a Japanese monster movie at this point.
I thought that was a Mortal Kombat mirror match for a second there.
Man, I want this to happen. How do we make this happen? So why do Obelisk and Midas bother you so much? I mean, like, I think there's probably some general consensus, and anybody who's played a bit will have an idea of why these two matchups are so difficult. But like, why do you find them personally so frustrating or frightening?
Just because of each individual captain's control versus how much they can do in a single turn. So the thing about Midas is that he can steal something, and depending on what he steals can determine how really dangerous he is. But the thing is, what's really difficult about, you know, dealing with him is obviously he's a 5 defense captain. And he has the ability to put clone up on top of being able to armor himself up. And he's just very difficult to kill. So, and lock down in general. So he just, and on top of that, all that, he also gets to hold 7 influence on instead of the normal 6 that most captains get. So the ability to do 7 things is just a problem and hard to deal with, obviously, because he's just such a hard model to take out along with that. So he could sit there like half turn with a 7 influence and be relatively safe. nobody's going to try. Nobody's going to really do anything to him. Or if they do, they're not going to kill him in a single activation. And then for Obulus, is more or less the same thing. He has the unpredictable movement, 2-inch reach, and he has dodges all over his playbook. So if he has momentum and you go up to attack him, he's probably getting away. And then also, he also has the ability to hold 8 influence, so he could do half of a team's work in a single activation, and his control aspect with Puppet Master.
Yeah.
They just get him the ball for free, and one of my favorite, even though I'm scared of him, it's still one of my favorite things to watch is Steve Jones from TKO give Obulus the cookie sheet, is what we call it. We call it when he gets his stack bait, the cookie sheet, and then he proceeds to do what he is coined the phrase the Obulus shuffle, where he does a shadow like. Puppet Master somebody to give him the ball so he can dodge 4 inches somewhere, buys a bunch of attacks to dodge even more, walk his 4 or 6 or whatever, and then score a goal. And that's what we call the Obulus shuffle.
Yeah, there's definitely... I mean, he's just super versatile. You know, like, you don't always need to load him up to his full clip, but, you know, that 8 influence just means that, you know, you can get a 6-point activation pretty reliably with him. You know, when you need it. You know, like I remember a game that I played locally where, you know, I was on 6 points, and my opponent was on 10, and I'd won initiative, and my first activation was Obulus, you know, take out a mascot, score a goal. You know, that's a pretty big step up from being just about to lose the game. Like he can turn it around amazingly well. And he can do that because he can get so much influence, just a huge amount of resource. It's not fair. I think he's broken. He might be broken.
I think my theory on this is I have no issues with what Obulus or Midas can do. My issue is how much influence they can hold.
Mm-hmm.
That I think that's one of the biggest problems, because if they were just locked down to just the 6 cap that most captains get, they wouldn't have as big as turns as they do now. Obviously, more so for Obulus, because that severely cuts down how much he could do with only 6. Midas not so much, but it would still, you would see a lot less complaining about how good he is if both of them were just at 6 influence.
That's fair. So what do you see, like what is your meta made up of, like what sort of guilds do you see you know, heavily represented, and what don't you see so much?
Honestly, we have most guilds represented. In my store, most guilds are represented. Mainly, each player has, you know, captains a single guild. So we have you know, Mary and Gabe from TKO. They both play Alchemist, and obviously Gabe plays Fish, and he's also picked up the Basins. And then we have Brewers and Dan. I'm the Butcher's player at the moment. And we have an Engineer's player. Hunters is also Dan's, but he's not playing them too much. He's kind of fallen off with them. And then we have Chris Jackson. He's my buddy. He's my regular training partner at the store. He plays Masons. And then, obviously, Union, that would be me. And Morticians being Steve.
So... When you have a tournament, how many people are rocking up to that?
Anywhere between 8 to 14.
Yeah, it's similar to what we get here.
Yeah, so I don't feel so bad about our 8-man tournament now.
We get, that's the regular tournaments for our monthly tournaments. Because at Armada Games, we run a tournament every month. We had a hiatus the last 2 months, just because of cons and whatnot, and obviously Gen Con as well. But once we get after Gen Con, we'll get back to the swing of things, and we have a tournament every month, and that's usually our turnout. If we have a sanction event, then obviously more people are going to show up.
Mm. Yeah, we're really struggling to get sanctioned event numbers here. I think we got to 13 was the biggest one that we've had in recent memory. But yeah, it'd be really nice to just push it over and get to 16. It'd be fantastic. Still a growing community, and like we're not a big state, South Australia, so we just don't have the numbers like you see on in Sydney and Melbourne. In Queensland.
Oh, we're not close to other states as well. I mean, travel time from another city, you know, it's a flight essentially, so there's no little driving or anything like that. I mean, on the eastern states, you know, you can drive from Canberra to Sydney or vice versa, but that's about it. So,
No, that's good. And so you're not going to Gen Con this year?
No, I'm not.
Got any predictions as to? I mean, I was going to ask, you know, whether you what kind of captains you'd see. Obviously, we've covered off what you don't like and possibly what you'd think would be the, you know, the higher ranking kind of ones. But you got any predictions as to what you reckon we'll see in terms of the captains on the final, you know, few tables?
Yeah, the captains I'll see will probably be Ibulus, Midas, Philip, and probably Theron.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see a Theron up there. I'm with you, Byron.
I
want
to see a Theron.
I'm with you. He's actually pretty good. I've come around to him. I thought he was a bit shit for a long time, and then I realized that, no, that was just me.
But yeah. No, Theron, and then obviously anybody who's playing Union. I want to see Rage Union just to see it. Mm. Theron and Rage Union, just because I want to see those two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I reckon Blackheart is in with a good shot as well. That guy is just super versatile. You know, and in the right hands, he can just put out the damage. Just really, really good team.
So no smoke predictions. I'm a big smoke fan. I'm an Alki player, so Midas and smoke. Just yeah. Oh, yes.
I know very well the power of smoke. The reason I don't say smoke is because I know that Gabe and Mary have demonstrated how powerful smoke can be, but yeah. I don't think the rest of the states understand that. They probably haven't wrapped their head fully around the concept of smoke. But we'll see.
Yeah, you just think that people are hung up on Midas because he's, you know, practiced and he's, you know, demonstrably good at winning games.
Yeah, I think the mindset is that, okay, if you're going to go to Gen Con, you're going to play in this tournament, you're going to play whatever you think is going to get you to England.
Yeah,
and cool. If you're playing, and if you're playing Alchemist, and if you've been playing this game for the better half of the year, you've been playing Midas. So unless you've been really grinding away with smoke and gotten really good with there, you're probably just going to stick with Midas.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I mean, there's always going to be a dark horse, and, you know, it's nice to surprise people who don't fully appreciate, like, I guess, how good a new captain can be, but...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, if somebody ends up playing smoke, you'll definitely have the surprise element going for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think the champions format would come into its own because I think, you know, if you actually went through and had a look at what two options a lot of the teams have, Alchemists, I reckon, are pretty strong in that in terms of, yeah, your two captain options and then where you can kind of go with them in terms of the playstyle. So,
yes, that is true.
So
they have probably the most flexibility with that.
Like, yeah. Just to go off on a bit of a tangent, in a fist fight between Gabe and Mary, who do you think would win?
Mary?
Yeah, my money's on Mary as well. Yeah.
Gabe tries to impress the store by wearing, you know, just tank tops, right? And his pale... He thinks he could just win fights through the reflection the sun gets off of his pale skin.
Oh, brilliant.
Are they? Is he wearing tap out gear, like MMA gear, or
no?
Or,
no, he's been wearing you know, athletic shorts. He hasn't upgraded to the tap out shorts with his tribal shoulder tattoo.
Awesome, man. That's just great. Like if you can get a picture of yourself with him at some point, we'll put it up on our website or on our Twitter feed, and we'll give you all the very well earned respect that we can. Now we're fans of Gabe, but in the same way that, you know, you're fans of a really really well played villain, like the guy from Die Hard, the villain in Die Hard. That's how I see Gabe. Obviously not quite as tan. What's his name? Gruber? I'm just going to call Gabe Gruber.
Hans Gruber.
Oh, man.
Not that I love Die Hard.
You got to tweet that at him, and he won't know what the heck is going on.
Yep.
Brilliant.
Hashtag Gruber. It's coming for you, Gabe. It's coming for you. Yeah, no, we want to get him on at some point, but, you know, obviously we wanted to get you on before we got Gabe on. Because, you know.
Yeah.
We just like him.
Right. And because you need to hear the truth from me, so then you'll just cross examine him if he tries to tell any lies on the podcast.
Yeah, we'll know. We'll know. Yeah, that's a good point, Byron. And thank you for bringing the truth.
You're welcome.
Yep. No Gen Con for you. That's obviously sad.
Yep.
Yeah. Maybe we could loop back to Fillet. You know, she's obviously really powerful, but, you know, why in particular do you not like her as much as Ox? I mean, you know, obviously there's that support aspect that Ox provides, but, you know, she can end a game on her own.
Right.
Is it a play style thing that you don't like, or?
I have a quick question for you. Is this an explicit podcast?
Yeah, man, you can swear all you want.
You see, Phyllis is a greedy whore. And she likes to take all the influence away from my team. Wow. I don't like that.
Wow. Wow. We're not that explicit. Fuck, man.
He just crossed the line, man. He just fucking crossed the line. Jesus. Yeah, so that goes into that support caster style versus the super solo style.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something fun about just completely killing the fuck out of someone, though. Like, that's gravity towards Veteran Rage. Just love that.
I completely understand the power fantasy, because even though I shit on her, I have been playing her up recently just because I picked up the model. I picked up the model and was like, okay, I might as well just play it on Vassal as well. So I've been playing games in real life, and been playing on Vassal, and I got a couple games in with her. And when she has her chances, just have six on her, and she just is a whirling tornado of knives and blood, then it's super fun. Mm. That's one thing you can say about Fillet, is that she is super fun.
Yeah. I played her a little bit and I quite enjoyed her until, you know, I got shut down pretty hard by people who knew what they were doing, yourself included, I think.
That's the thing. If you know your opponent's playing Fillet and they like to just give her six near every turn, then you get pretty good at locking that down.
Mm.
Or at least avoiding it so that she just doesn't get, you know, two kills or killing a goal in a turn.
Yeah, man. It's that 6-point activation. It's just killer. I've been finding Jaykar's pretty good at that as well. Like, you can set him up to get a 6-point activation, which really helps the Hunter's gameplay.
Yes. You know,
makes it a lot easier to sort of get that last few kills and get the game over the line. So, Fish, what sort of fish list do you play?
I play mainly the Corsair Fisherman. And for the Corsair Fisherman, I generally have on my team... this is on Vassal, of course, because certain models are not out. So I'll play Corsair, and then I'll have Sakana, and I'll have myself Grayscales.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing this, I'm starting with models that are already out. So Corsair, Sakana, Grayscales, and then I'll have Jack and Gutter with Salt if I'm playing a game on the board in real life. And that's like kind of my starting six right there. So obviously when Tentacles comes out, I'll trade out Salt for Tentacles. But yeah, just I like that list. It's my it's a very annoying 2-inch reach list.
Yeah.
Everybody on that list is 2-inch reach, and it's super annoying to deal with. the couple of times I've played it against people, they get super annoyed with that, just because I just push people around and then keep everybody a 2-inch reach and just gang out. I'll gang out whoever the captain is. I've played, was it Hammer Masons twice, and both times Hammer has just came up at me, just charging in to kill Corsair, which he manages to do. But the thing is, he ends up like ganged out by the rest of the team, and then Corsair comes back later to finish him off, and then I score a goal or something like that.
Yeah, I do like that. You know, that fish list that is able to get a few takeouts in addition to a couple of goals. You know, yes. I think it just frees them up a bit. I mean, Campbell plays fish, so.
I reckon I stumbled across that in a game with you, in terms of I played a bit of a shooty list and was trying to maximize, you know, the legendary and live the angel dream shooting from halfway with Super Shot. And then I think in the end it ground down, and I just, of course, they just started beating people down. Like, you know, as a fish player, I came from, because that's where I started, you know, when I first started playing, and I came from a shark background where it's all goals and you don't even bother trying to take them out. And then Corsair all of a sudden just, you know, introduces this, oh, I can actually kill people and crowd them out and knock them down and pull them in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And really cool play style.
It is. And so, and then for a list, and then my other list that, like, so if I was building a tournament team, obviously Jack, Getter, Sakana, Grayskills would be part of that. The other two on the sideboard would be Vet Siren and Kraken. And thanks to Vassal, then they're able to dabble with Vet Siren, with Kraken also on the team. And Vet Siren is stupid good.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, she's amazing. She just, the enormous amount of survivability, she's really hard to kill.
Well, escaping fate's once per turn, isn't it?
Yeah, it's once per turn, but a 4-inch, well, I like, reanimate was always a big, was like always a real big thing to deal with, a very annoying thing to deal with. But then you have, but that was because they just gained 3 health, and you, like, you had to try to whittle them down again. But then escape fate, that just 4-inch dodge out of trouble, that's really big. Because most of the time, once you're, because most of the time somebody has already moved to get to the point to kill a model, or at least Siren anyway, because she's never like out in the open by herself. You have to get to her. So most people have already moved, and then she's just gonna dodge 4 inches away after you finally get her down to 0 HP. Like it's demoralizing.
Yeah, and it can really soak up a lot of activations as well. You know, it puts your opponent in this situation where, you know, they either dedicate a whole bunch of stuff to try and take her out, or they just don't, and then, you know, she can pretty much do what she wants with the game. So you're in a bit of a catch 22. Annoying as fuck if you're playing against her.
Yeah, I just think Vet Siren is really good just because she's probably just as big of a goal threat or even bigger than her season one counterpart. Just because on top of her 7-knight movement, they also gave her Shadowlike.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, so she could be in combat and then shadow like out of combat, and then just run 7 or 9 inches, hopefully under legendary, and then just be, you know, another backboard to shoot off of for another snapshot opportunity, which is kind of what I base my fish list around, is that Corsair tries to pop his legendary, and then everybody on my list besides Kraken, of course, is a 3-6 kicker or better. And
yeah, including the octopus.
Yep, including the octopus. Yep, when I get to play Tentacles, he can score
with his 3-8. That's amazing.
I'm really tempted to pick up a Corsair list. I just really like him. I like the playstyle. And, you know, Octopus as a mascot is... I think that's just inspired. I want one.
Oh, poor Salt. Poor Salt. He's going to go sit with Harry the Hat on the bench now.
Man, they're just going to have like a little pity party.
Oh, man, so sad.
What has Salt ever done for you? What is the best thing that Salt has done for you?
For me?
Whoever wants to answer the question.
Gabe has scored multiple goals with Salt.
Fair
enough.
There's
that.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Like two dice shots on goal, effectively. Like he's 1-4 kick, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's a 1-4. Yeah. He's fast though, and he's got where that goes. So yeah.
Ah, there you go. All right.
So he can get across the board, but the most he ever does for me is dies and gives me 2 momentum with Love Creature. So yeah.
That can be pretty handy as well.
I know there's a lot of flack for Salt, but I don't mind him. I think he can do all right.
Would you say that the amount of shit that Salt cops is utterly ridiculous?
Yes, I think it's ridiculous. I think because people are like, oh, he doesn't do anything. He just sits back at the goal. And in my opinion, if your mascot is goal defending, I don't think you're not utilizing your team to the you're utilizing your team as much as you can. Because the only thing that should be sitting back defending the goalpost is a goalie or greed. Those are the only two things that should be defending that goalpost. Other than that, your mascot should be out in the field doing something.
Okay, well that's an interesting point. Like what sort of things would you expect a mascot to be doing? I mean, there's the obvious stuff of providing like a gang bonus, but you know, what other things would you typically do with your mascot?
Well, what I typically do with my mascot is, all right, so for all the teams I play, I try to use the mascot in one way or the other. And by doing that, I try to use players that work off of my mascot in one way or another. So when it comes to the fishermen, I'll play Jack just because of the get over here. So that's more movement for Salt. Mm-hmm. And it can help Jack out, gang out for... For the butchers, it's obviously Brisket and Boiler, who work off of Princess. Then for, you know, the Union have Coin, and Coin just works well with anybody who he's next to. He could do stuff for him. Even when I was playing the Engineers, I was a big advocate of the Cricket Bomb, and I used that every single game.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the old mainspring bomb, too. I played Engies for a little while, and I came to the same conclusion that you did, that, you know, they're probably a bit weaker than they should be. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, like, winding him up and sending him in.
Yeah, but that's baseless. Like, if your mascot should be out in the field doing something, it shouldn't be just guarding the goal, because it shows that you don't know how to protect a model. How do I say this? For other people, I think this is another thing about Fillet. People like to play Fillet is because Ox is a 3-1 captain. So being a 3-1 captain with a tough hide, he's obviously pretty easy to kill. Hmm. And a big target just because he buffs the team so well. So then you take out that thing, you put in Fillet, who's a 5 defense, with, for whatever reason, has fucking 16 health. and she could just... she'll just take whatever you give to her.
Yeah, she's pretty hard to kill.
Yeah, so I think people who put their people who try to like just hide their mascot by their goalpost are like the same people who complain about 3-1 players and because they don't know how to protect them.
Mm. So do you think that's the inability to acknowledge threats adequately, or it's, you know, just part of the learning curve of as you kind of get into the game? That's what you need to.
It's a learning curve. It's definitely a learning curve. It's a learning curve because I think that's a big thing that the Brewers always have to deal with. Brewers players will know, like, it's a pretty difficult, or Mason's player, it's pretty difficult to get around the 3-1, 3-2. Like, how do you deal with a player who's easily hit and controllable.
So what you're effectively saying is that people who don't know how to protect their mascots are also the sort of people who would vote for Trump.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I know, Byron. Like, I have to put this out into the internet. I'm worried for you, man. Yeah. You're pretty controversial as well. I mean, that's two controversial guests in a row. Look, man, I don't think anybody really wants to vote for Trump. Not in their hearts.
Bet in America, I beg to differ.
Man, what is that like?
There's a lot of guns to be shot. There's a lot of hunting. There's a lot of gun ranges that people do not want to give up.
Yeah. And that's they've just got an excess of ammunition. They just created too much ammunition, and you just need to shoot it all off really quickly.
Right.
Man, guns aren't going to shoot themselves.
No, that's right? A fair point. That is a valid point.
I like that idea of learning how to protect your pieces. So, you know, what have you seen good Masons players or good Brewers players do to, I guess, mitigate that that low def that is kind of at the core of their team?
It's honestly just all comes down to positioning. That's all it does. That's all it really is how do you position your players and how do you protect models by putting them next to each other. Like, for instance, I said this on TKO. We went over this. I was playing Steve with my Union list and my Rage Union. And we asked the question post-game, why did I clump up four of my players and just a little, you know, circle jerk, as you might want to call it, of just four players all engaging each other. Like, why did you do that? And I was like, well, when you look at Obvious's Puppet Master, he can make a jog, pass, or attack. But the thing is, they turn into a friendly model when they do that. So if he were to use it on somebody and then they would try to jog away from the rest of the players ganging each other out, then they would have to take parting blows and thereby getting knocked down before they even reach where Obelisk wants to take them.
Nice.
That's a good point.
Secret power and tech.
That's a little tip that I've learned playing the Morticians. Like, at first turn, just everybody gangs each other out, and then that way you get knocked down. If you're really worried about Obelisk, like stealing somebody and just bring them to the middle of the field where they're going to die. But, you know, positioning, like blocking, not blocking line of sight, but like blocking where models can be pushed or stuff like that. For like, and obviously like getting out of threat ranges, like, Tapper, let's see, yeah, we'll just use Tapper because he's the obvious person to do this. So Tapper for the Brewers, he's obviously, majority of the time, the first activation. So he rushes in there, and he goes in there and tries to kill a model. He puts Commanding Aura up, and for the rest of the turn, he's 3-1 model with Tough High just sitting in the middle of the field. And then any good player on the other side of that, well, they'll A, see it coming, and B, they're probably going to orchestrate Tapper to be killed that turn, because that's the thing that I would do. If you could kill him, obviously, if you're playing the fish, you can't do that. You'll just work around it. But since I'm playing Butchers, I'm playing against a Brewers player, Tapper runs in, goes and kills Shank, because that's the obvious target. Then I'm going to orchestrate the rest of my turn on killing Tapper. And it's going to get done. So obviously the job of the Brewers player is to position Tapper on the field in a safe position where he can't be touched by most of the team. And B, he has to make sure he has momentum that he can counterattack opponents when he needs to. So, yeah, when it comes down to positioning, that's about it. It's protecting a 3-1 model, it's positioning.
That's an interesting point. Like, I've been noticing in games where you've got two players who are quite aware of threat ranges of models and are deliberately moving things in such a way as to ensure that, you know, no model that's loaded up with 3 or 4 influence is going to get any momentum out of that for the turn. You know, it becomes a game where the player with the ball is definitely favored. And I wonder whether Guild Ball is going to increasingly go in that direction. You know, as people become more aware of, you know, how critical it is not to, I guess, give away a player, you know, cheaply, or in such a way that they allow the opponent to generate a heap of momentum.
Yeah,
I think receiving in that sort of context is always going to be better.
Yeah, having the ball is obviously the way. Like, having the ball is obviously a good thing for your team, because it's a good resource. The ball, obviously, because even when you're not able to hit anything, you can pass the ball around and generate momentum.
Yeah.
And obviously, the threat of a 4-point activation is always good.
Yeah.
But
it really is.
But along with people learning how to play with the ball, is going to be increased. That you're going to see more chances, more occasions where people just give up the ball, so they don't have the responsibility of it. Because as the Butcher's player, that's the thing I will do. I will not play the ball to give not. So I don't have the responsibility of it, and I can kill the rest of your team.
Yeah, like killing the ball is obviously a useful strategy. I mean, like, morticians like to play that way as well. I think hunters probably play that way a little bit. I don't know that any other team apart from Butchers, maybe Brewers, Union as well, but can legitimately play that tactic quite as well.
Well, I don't kill the ball. They have the ball. I just choose not to go after it.
But again, I mean
that's a team. That's a luxury. That's a luxury that the Butchers have.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I suppose the counterpoint is that, you know, if you're kicking off, you do get that extra movement. You know, you do get that increased threat range, and you know, you can use a piece that is quite good at generating some momentum to do that.
Yeah. If you're not as comfortable with having the ball, like morticians and butchers, they might do that just because they don't care about the ball as much and they're comfortable without it. But for me personally, I always take the ball.
Yeah, Campbell's the same. He's a man who likes balls.
I do like balls. Balls do. I was just thinking then, as you were talking about the ball as resource and how there's only 3 kind of teams that can generate momentum from range. And I've been playing a lot of smoke, and I actually love it when they kick the ball to me, obviously, as the kickoff. Everyone loves that. But in a situation where you know you're up against a team that only generates momentum in melee, I mean, I previously, and this is probably just part of the learning curve, I'd set up the first team goal, kick the goal, whereas now with smoke, I'll sit back, I'll attrition you, I'll just hold that ball, because I know at any point with, you know, the smoke or vitriol, I can get a goal, but I'd rather try to kill you off and starve you of the momentum at the same time that I'm winning first turn every turn. And really, yeah, where I used to, and it's, you know, probably a newbie kind of thing, I'd always line up, get the right activation, have 3 on vitriol to then, you know, do a pass to a dodge forward, charge, or, you know, sprint and kick the goal. So
yeah, smoke has the luxury of just waiting with the ball at her feet for the majority of the game. And it's really annoying to get to her when she decides to play like that.
Yeah, it's good. I like it.
Is there anything else that you that you think is worth mentioning, Byron? Anything else that you've you know, got on your mind, or any shit on your liver that you want to get off it?
I think I need to do more things to educate players on how to play this game. That's more of a gripe on myself. because I have the power to do it. I'm just too lazy to do it.
Right, right. Well, look, man, we're all about, you know, providing those with a messiah complex the means of disseminating their message. And yeah. I'm glad that we can accommodate you in that regard.
Yeah, great. So we're more than happy to welcome you back at any point to have another chat and continue your education process.
Right. I think people need to when new players in this game need to learn the game really fast and really good players if they just learn a couple things about, you know, the ball and how fights work in this game. And I think that will really help new players along a lot, even players who are, you know, been playing the game for a while. Because I don't know. That's a thing that I regularly get away with. When I play games of Guild Ball, I regularly get away with winning the fight and using the ball as extra movement and free momentum and a whole bunch of other things. And I wish I could I gotta sit down and make videos to teach people that.
Yeah, I think that extra movement and the free momentum is key. You know, like threat range, like we've been talking about, threat ranges are everything in this game. And if you can, I guess, take away that safe distance for your opponent, that is just huge. And, you know, having the ball to do that is, you know, easily one of the best ways to do it.
Yes.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't have any other questions. Cam, do you?
No, I'm good. I mean, I was just going to finish off by saying that we will post podcast needs your address. We'll send you a Double Dodge pack. We have these fantastic stubby holders that we like to throw out to people because you have just joined the Magical Pants Party, Byron. And a few other fun little things. So, that's all I've got to say, Dave.
Yep, official friend of the show, Byron. We love you, man. Sure, we love you.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Sorry you're not going to Gen Con, but thanks for talking to us. You know, it's a consolation prize. We get that.
Awesome. Yep. I enjoy this prize.
Yeah, nice one, man. No, thanks again. Do you have anything you'd like to say by way of closing remarks?
The Tampa area meta is the best meta in the U.S., and if any of us were going to Gen Con, we would have won the tournament.
Oh, brilliant. Right.
Well, you know what they say about winning, Byron. Half the battle is showing up.
We're going to get those videos online, Byron, so we can, you know, earn you some money and get you some sponsorship for next year.
Yeah, right? That's what I try to get sponsorships. I use TKO as leverage to do that, but it didn't work out. I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Man,
you'd think with the amount of time Gabe puts in down at the docks, you know, with the sailors, when the ships come in, there'd be a bit more cash floating around.
I love it.
Yeah.
We're going to have Gabe on pretty soon then, I think.
Man, they don't call him the Riverboat Queen for nothing.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. I have no idea where to go with that. I'm not even sure what you're talking
about. It's topical because he plays fisherman. That's where he's getting at. That's what he's talking about. It's
okay.
A fisherman thing.
Yeah. The dots have been joined. Fantastic.
I'm glad we could get together and do this.
You're a champ, Byron. You're a champ. Thank you very much.
Thank you guys for having me.
No worries, Byron. You're welcome anytime. Good morning, Campbell. Good
morning. I need another coffee, I think.
Yeah. I don't know that I should have another one.
You're on 4 or 5 at the moment.
I've had the equivalent of 5.
Oh,
but
brilliant.
It's like a couple of double shots and then one to chase it down.
That's the way to start.
Yep, I'm probably going to have a heart attack.
During round one. So we're on our way up to Harlequin Halls for a little tournament. And I thought we'd do a little bit of carball action. beforehand, and I thought, given I organised this, so depending upon the numbers and whether there's an odd number, and I'll play. We know Dave's definitely playing.
Yep, I'm in. I'm all in. Balls deep.
Balls deep. So I thought I'd ask you a few questions about the Hunters and what kind of matchups and how you're going to roll them out against different teams.
So I've obsessively thought about this for the last few days.
I'm unsurprised by this.
So I'm pretty sure we're going to see Morticians, Brewers, Masons, maybe some Butchers, maybe some Engineers.
Not sure what Sean will bring.
Like, Engie's not so worried about, that's all good. Probably play a fair bit of 2-inch melee, so like that 10 influence Hunters team with Hearn and Cena. Morticians I'm actually kind of worried about, because Obulus is just a fucker.
So what's obviously, you know, with the Hunters, there's a bit of a core, and then you have a few that you swap in and out. What do you think your six will be?
My six, I'll probably, like, my eight is Theron, Fahad, Hearn, Jakar, Chaska, Egret, Cena, Avarice, and Greed.
Oh, nice.
And I think, like, what I'm wanting to play into that Morticians matchup is probably a lot of, or as much 2-inch melee as I can.
Yep.
Just to sort of compete with dudes like Ghast and Obulus. And I'll probably run, like, you know, Cena seems like a good choice in that context.
Yeah, it seems like a good matchup against Ghast, especially in that middle beatdown kind of area of the game.
Because I think, you know, Cena can take more damage than Ghast.
Yeah.
Can probably do more damage than Ghast as well. But, yeah, like, that guy is just, you know, he's awesome.
He's better.
But if you put a lot of effort into taking, or not even that much, but if you put effort into taking Ghast down, that really does limit the utility of the Morticians team, I think.
Well, then all of a sudden you can start spreading out and picking off their other pieces, because you find that, you know, some of their other models, I mean, you generally don't go after Obby because he's just that hard to kill or get to.
Mm.
But the other pieces, you know, if you can get a couple of people on, then it's it can be all over pretty quick.
Yeah.
Especially with the debuffing, I mean, your silencers and, you know, the high def models. You know, you get a knockdown, and then you get a snared, and then you get a singled out. You know, all of a sudden, it's see you later.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm thinking, like, you probably want to play a bit more of a... Like, you probably want Egret in that lineup as well, just to give you that little bit more football edge.
Yeah.
And Flurry is really useful as well.
Mm, yes. I did play a little bit of Hunters the other day, and I don't think I got one Flurry off. I think Egret died a couple of times, and that was about it.
Yeah, man. Yeah. She's really versatile. Like, she's an interesting striker. So, are you sure you're not going to play today?
Well, it'll depend on how many people are there. I'm there as the odd man out, obviously. So, I'm not. If there's not many people, then I'm not going to, you know, obviously force a buy on anyone.
Mm.
Given how many that we roughly know are going, it looks like there'll be an odd number. So, yeah, I'll play.
Yeah.
Sure. So
it'd be good if we got to eight. You know, like, ideally.
That's a nice perfect round number.
Yeah, three rounds. Smash it out.
Yeah, so, no, it'll be good. I mean, if I do play, I'll probably, because I've only been back from holidays a week or so, and so I'll probably just play the smoke that I know and love and just fuck with people that way. Nothing beats a good condition game.
You are the foremost troll in our meta. That Twitter campaign that you waged not that long ago was spectacular. Man. No, it should be a good day. Like, three rounds is good. You know, start at 9:30, probably finish at about 3:30.
Yeah, I reckon. Oh, easily. I mean, so we'll be playing the 45-minute clock. It's the obviously eight-man roster, and 1 minute clock out time. So you can't imagine most rounds going beyond an hour and a half unless it's really tight. So yeah, we'll smash it out pretty quick. That'll be interesting to see, you know, how everyone's been going. I hear Big Daz from Nerdvana Games hasn't played that much lately, so
I'm encouraged by that.
I'm encouraged, but his Brewers are pretty nasty at the same time.
He knows what he's doing. He's done it enough times.
So
we should probably mention that Daz is providing prize support as well.
He is. He's very good like that. So he's he's dishing that out, although I'm not too sure of what it actually is. I've just given him free rein to bring some stuff. So
just like fucking card sleeves.
Yeah, basically.
Card sleeves and old Monopoly dice.
Well, and a whole bunch of Harry the Hats, because, you know, just can't get rid of them.
So, oh, man.
Yeah. Everyone gets a Harry.
Harry's for all. Though Dano was saying he doesn't mind Harry in certain Union matchups.
I did. I reckon I came in on a conversation, or maybe he was saying, where he's got rising anger.
Yeah.
And so in the middle of the pitch, he, you know, free momentum's free momentum. And if you don't want to kill him, well, that's fine. You've got a guy that's going to just hit you occasionally. So, yeah, I can see the advantages of that. I think he had a... what was it? It was a Union team, but also it was a vet range one. So then you've got two models.
Two rising anger models.
Yeah, so potentially that, you know, if the opponent's not thinking what they're doing, they've given up full momentum, you know.
Yeah. That's why Gust is such a fucker.
Yeah. Yeah, hit him. Oh, momentum. Fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll counterattack.
Yeah.
Knock you down.
Yeah. And now you can't do anything.
Yeah.
I was thinking about Harry the other day. I reckon... he's a one-inch melee. I think that's one of the biggest disappointments. Mm. Like, you know, for a guy that you can go crazy and smack people down and looks huge, I think if he had two-inch melee,
yep,
he might just be almost playable.
So that wrench that he's got, that's a pretty long wrench.
It is.
And that's not a euphemism.
No, and he doesn't get to use it that often. Like, no one, you know, no one puts him on the table.
He must be married as well.
That's correct. Poor man.
We're going to have to get some coffee into you, mate.
Yeah, I know. I'm a bit slow this morning. Hold on.
Yeah, there we go. Mm. Fucking beautiful day today.
It is. Beautiful Adelaide. I reckon it's going to be high teens today for winter. That's not bad.
I feel like we're turning the corner into spring right now.
Yeah, is that a good thing for global warming, though? I don't know. It is technically still the middle of winter.
We're like frogs in a pot at the moment. Yeah. You know, we'll probably pass out before we get...
That's actually a fair point. Yeah, just slowly turn the heat up and then we're stuffed.
It's all over. Oh, man. No, I'm pumped for today. I've been looking forward to this all week. I got all my hunters painted up.
I did see them looking spectacular. I love the Deno Avarice and then Greed Tech.
Yeah.
That's, they are the most broken.
Well, he claims that it's his, but he claims a lot of things.
He does.
Yeah.
I think James Morehouse has played, or I've seen tournaments where he's played Avarice and Greed with the old Hunter's build, so...
I feel like Avarice and Greed enable Jaker to go in last and then to get first activation the following turn.
So it's the singled out?
Just
that extra activation.
It's the extra activation in the first turn.
Yep.
You can send him... You can wait and try and get him an optimal setup. And, I mean, like, if your opponent's canny, you... may not always get that opportunity, but the ideal situation is he's absolute last. You know, he generates 4 momentum, does 8 damage, then goes in, generates another 4, does 8 damage on the following turn, or whatever.
And most models aren't 16 boxes.
No.
Whoever you're going to target. That's a fair point.
I love Jaker.
He is nuts. No, I have to say, like, when we played the Hunter's Mirror match, he just gets work done.
Man, you were cutting shit up left, right, and centre with him.
He's so good.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to pin down, too.
He is. Actually, Tim was saying the other night, like, the thing that he hates most about Jaker is he goes in, does a stack of damage, runs away. And so you never feel like you've got a chance to really get a hold of him. Yeah. Yeah. Particularly if he drops a trap or gut and strings you.
Well, I mean, the trap's the main one, isn't it? So, you know, automatically, they've got to then trigger the trap another way just to, you know, get to them. And then, you know, I think I did that the other night where I got another model too. And then against a canny player like yourself, you then picked up the fact that other model had got, you know, snared himself. And then I think chucked it for hard, or someone else that got a benefit off the snare straight in on them.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, man, I'm just, you know, you're trying to unpick the mess. So. Yep. I got a lot of respect for the Hunters and how to play them. They're, you know, a lot trickier than I first realised, but also I think once you get over that first hump of the challenge of understanding them, they actually are quite enjoyable.
Yeah, I also have to recant. I was wrong about Theron. I was wrong. He's not as shit as I first thought.
Did we bag him on the cast?
Well, I did.
Generally.
No, I did. I was like, this guy's shit. what does he do? It turns out that, like, punching anything with Snared as a character trait is fucking amazing.
Yes. So you look for some ranged attacks early, and then when he gets into the melee, he's kind of in that middle of the park.
Yep. And he really likes singled out from Avarice or Hearn as well. He can actually put out a fair bit of damage once he gets going.
He's got Momentus 2 on a 3, something like that?
Yeah, 2 on a 3. He's got a lot of, like, pushes and dodges. He's a great, like, model for counter-attacking with as well, like, defensive counter-attacking, just to, I guess, shut down your opponent's momentum generation. You know, because he's got that double dodge on the 2, I think it is.
Yeah, so straight away you can just bounce out.
Double dodge.
Double dodge. Double dodge.
Yep. Yeah. I hope you do get to play today, mate.
Ah, it'd be good. Yeah, it would be good indeed. Otherwise, I can just, you know, sit there and watch and twiddle my thumbs and have 5 more coffees.
Yeah.
Get up to your standard.
Well, I tend to peter out about midday. You know, this keeps me going for half a day.
All right. So the first couple of rounds will be right.
Yep. And then I'll just go looking for coffee.
Snorting it on here.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
I have got a caffeine addiction too, so. We might even try to pick up some at the lunch break, pick up an interview or a quick chat with a couple of people.
That's a good idea.
I'm sure, you know, Big Daz and Tim. Tim's a bit shy, even though, you know, he is a Lawyers Guild and our pundit.
Also just generally hilarious.
Yes, yes. So we might do that and then maybe have a recap on the way home.
Hey, do you think we can convince Daz to strap Tim to his chest? Like some Avarice and Greed situation.
That's a Photoshop job.
I would lend anybody my belt if they wanted to have a go at that.
Oh, man.
All right, so
I think we can wrap it up there, almost up there anyway, and do a recap on the way home.
Awesome.
Too easy.
Whoa! All right, man. What a day.
We're on. That was epic.
It was epic. I'm exhausted.
Tired?
I'm a little bit. Yeah, I had one pretty easy game and 2 very, very hard games.
Go on. Well, how about we do a bit of a recap? So basically, I ran the tourney, but we had an uneven number, so I basically just did the drop game. So I got 3 games in, which was pretty cool, but obviously didn't take points from. So we'll go through Dave and what he did in each of the games. So round one,
played Tyson, who was playing Engineers. He hasn't played a lot, so, you know, it was a 12-0 kind of, it was a bit of a stomp.
Nice guy, though. I played
awesome dude. And he's like, pretty gracious about the whole thing. So, just basically shut him down, you know.
What lineup did you take into it?
I took the same lineup all day. Daron, Fahad, Jaykar, Chaska, Egret, Avarice and Greed, and fuck, who else? Just drawing blanks. Daron, Fahad, Jaykar, Chaska, Egret, Avarice and Greed. Yeah, that's it.
That is all 6. Fantastic. So yep. You're looking for that extra activation.
And that first game, it just played out beautifully. Like, he didn't really have any concept of the idea of not getting into Jaykar's threat range. So in Jaykar went, whoop. Cut Salvo up. I mean, he did get a bit unlucky in that he went for a Salvo shot on Jaykar to try and knock him down. 2 dice leaning 4s, and he missed it. And I think that's, like, the problem with the Engineers. Like, when you miss those critical plays, you fuck up. But even if he had done that, I had momentum, I had distance, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah, you could still stand him out and charge.
Do what I wanted.
Do the Jaykar thing.
So then Jaykar activated first activation next turn, killed Salvo, scores a goal. So I'm 6 up, you know, by the first activation of the second turn. And just kind of rolled out like that. So that game was, yeah, it was all right. It wasn't anything to write home about.
Cool. So you went one went up.
One went up. Then
you drew who in round 2?
Big Daz. Daz from Nerdvana Games. And he was playing Brewers. He was playing Esters. And that was just a super tight game. Like, we were both aware of what each other did. And, you know, like, I was always holding off or trying to force him to use Esters early so I could get, like, poison and snared and bleed up. And, you know, that kind of worked. But in the end, I realized that I wasn't going to win the punch fight. And I had to go for goals. So Theron managed to tackle, I think Spigot had the ball. One initiative, had an activation where Theron could go in, like do a bit of damage to generate momentum and then just score a goal. So I went to four, and then Egret got another situational goal after Avarice knocked Friday down, and she was able just to scoop up the crumbs and slot the goal.
Someone just shot over a player.
Yeah, it was like a two dice goal, but I figured it was probably worth taking the chance.
Well, in the end, it turned out to be definitely worth it. Score. So
yeah.
Still a 75% chance if you've got two dice.
So we got to this point where I'm at eight and he's at eight, and it really, like, the last turn was super tense because his clock was down and the game did come out to clock. I scored 2 points on clock, but I managed to get Theron got the ball again off Friday, and I was in this situation where I was engaged with Mash to have to get it. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I can probably get a goal if I can get Theron to the goal, but I don't want to run the risk of losing the ball. And, like, his clock's down, so this seems like a viable play. Spigot was on three, or Spigot was on four. So I just had Theron sort of... Spigot had come back on wounded. He's on four. JK had done a bit of work to him as well. So I used Theron's character plays to do that four damage to take him out and put me on 10. And then it was a case of there was enough activations left in the turn that every time Daryl passed, I had extra activations and I could get one victory point. So, you know, it was like fucking super tense, very, very kind of draining game.
Yeah, I came over at the end of that. Well, in fact, it was interesting. I came over and it was towards the end and you were 4-4. And then obviously the nature of both teams is a bit of an attrition that it speeds up quite quickly at the end. And then it's, you know, points, points, points. So it was really good end to the game. And it basically came down to the fact that, yeah, Daryl clocked out with an activation. And then so you went to 11 and then he didn't realise he had one more player to activate. So we were looking at what was going to happen time-wise with his influence allocation, which in hindsight we've worked out you do start your clock then. But then Scum hadn't activated, didn't have any influence, so couldn't actually get any damage or win the game off that. And so, yeah, you won it
on time.
On time, which was good. I mean, it's obviously a viable option, and you ground him down. I think you were up by at least 10 minutes at that point too.
Yeah, so. I had a huge amount on my clock, but I think the real question now was, like, could I get another... Oh, I probably could have got another 2 points and won through a traditional approach, but it would have been a lot harder. And, you know, if his dice had caught fire or whatever, it might have taken some options off the table.
Well, potentially, I think he was on 10 at that point as well. If he wins the roll for first turn, he's then got 1 minute. You know, had he not clocked out at that point, 1 minute to basically take one of your guys out. That would have been interesting, more just to see if it's even possible.
Yeah, he could have done it, I think. He could have taken out Greed or Egret, who were, like, down by the goal line and, you know, had... down by my goal, and Friday was within charge range of one of them at least.
Yeah, fair point. So, no, that was a really good game. So, 2-0 at this point. Yep. We had a nice little bit of lunch and then went into the final round. It was an 8-man tournament, so basically there were two people on 2-0, you and Sean from Jackal Design, so he does laser cut stuff. And Sean was playing the Butchers. And you're playing, obviously, the Hunters.
Yep.
So, yeah, how did this one roll out?
This one was very close as well. It was 12-10. And, you know, my clock was, like, completely wound down by the end of the game. But, yeah, no, it was a really tough one. Like, the opening two turns, I had shut Boar down really well. I'd shut Ox down really well, like, pinned Ox and stopped his viable charge lanes and, you know, had Ox wasting four influence one turn, second turn I think it was.
Nice.
You know, so all the good Hunter stuff, but then I made a fucking critical error and okay. I'm still kicking myself about this. Like, I passed, Theron was in the scrum, got the ball off, I think he got the ball off like either Brisket or somebody like that. Anyway, somebody had the ball, Theron got the ball. Passed the ball to Egret and I used it to dodge her forward. Yep. Thinking that, like, Boar would be just out of range. And I didn't really see that she had marked target on her. And it was just like one of those moments where you're like, oh, fuck, I've probably lost this game.
And 2 inches on a charge from Boar.
Yeah.
Seems bad.
It was just like... Yeah, and when I dodged her forward, I kind of thought to myself, like, the theory was that, all right, I need to get her up there and get a goal. And, you know, like, that's fine, but, yeah, I just fucking had those, one of those brain fart moments, and, yeah. Boar came in, just wrecked her.
So he killed her in that activation?
Yeah, Boar scatters. Brisket gets it back at that point.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, we were basically at 4-4, and I think that's because, yeah, I had 2 takeouts, he had 2 takeouts. But then all these butchers are engaged, and, you know, he pops legendary and starts taking out, like, 2 players a turn. I did manage to generate enough momentum to win the next roll.
Yep.
And I took out... JCar went in, tried to take out Ox, couldn't quite do it. You know, I was looking for those, like, 3s and 4s.
Yep.
And in the end, like, Ox was on 2 at the end. Of JCar's activation. Then Ox goes, kills JCar. Greed, I put 3 influence on him, 2 normal and 1 goal influence. He was engaged with Brisket. He went crazy. He fucking cut her up. She was only on 3. So I go to 10 at that point. He's at 10. I'm at 10. And then he just activates Boar, who charges my cat. And Kitty said no. Kitty rolled over, got her tummy scratched.
Wow, your defensive stance. I mean, it was, you know, it was a close one, but I think, yeah.
Yeah, his dice exploded at that point. Just a bunch of 6s.
And when you've got Furious plus, you know, the charge, he's just rolling that many dice, you're going to hit 6s. And,
yeah.
You know, when a cat's only got
8.
8 total, yeah.
Yeah, so he hits her, does 3. Knocks her down. No, only did 2. Knocked her down. And then knocked her down on the next attack.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once she's knocked down, like, death 4, no armor's pretty much all over. Yeah, so that took him to 12, and that was game. Had he not taken her out, I had Chaska loaded up, and his next target was probably Shank. I had a bit of momentum in the bank, so bonus time momentum. 2 boomboxes.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure you were in range. I remember this point of the game that, you were in range to basically walk up. Shank was on 7. A double boombox would have won you the game. So it basically came down to that one last
activation.
It was pretty tense. It was a good one to watch. So.
And like, my nerves were shot afterwards as well. You know, like, those games that you play where you're just like, fuck, that was amazing. And Sean's like, he's a top bloke as well. Like, yeah. Really, really great guy to play with. Fucking gentleman. And yeah. I really enjoyed that game.
It looked like a good one. You basically had 10 seconds at the end too, so I'm sure that wasn't helping the time constraint as well.
No, it did. It, like, focused my mind. I'm like, all right, that has to happen. And it pretty much rolled out like that. But, you know, yeah, it's always a bit nerve-wracking when you're, like, down on clock. And
yeah, and you get that little added pressure.
Yeah.
No, that was a really good one to watch. I mean, I got to watch the end of both those games, which was good. Some good tense struggles. There was actually, on the day, I think 4 games that went 12-10 or 12-11, like really close ones.
Excellent.
Yeah, which is what you want. Yeah, and so you ended up finishing second?
Second.
Yeah, pretty awesome.
Not the scum father, maybe no. The scum uncle.
Scum uncle. The scum cool. So, it was a pretty successful day. Daryl, I know we say it every time we mention his name, but from Nirvana Games SA, he did the sponsorship, so all the money went back into a prize, and he basically donated, gave us twice as much as the cost of all the stuff. So
yep.
There were heaps of prizes. Everyone took multiple things away, which was pretty cool.
Yeah. Somebody got Icy Sponge tokens.
Someone got lots of Icy Sponge tokens. But no, I thought it was a pretty successful day. Hopefully next time we run it, we can maybe push it up to a 12 or a 16.
16 would be glorious. And we've got some dudes who are sort of looking at Guildball a little more closely now as well, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the more the merrier. It was a successful day.
That was awesome. You did a good job, man.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
What was that tournament software you were using?
Tiebreak. So that's the one. Now, is it endorsed by...
I have no idea.
It's basically a for all kind of gaming, from your war machines to, you know, basically to running your tournaments on. It's really good. You can actually register on. So most of our players, I just logged everyone in. And it does it all for you. So you do all their victory points. It does the draw for you. You can Also put down the what club they're from and set it to not select people from the same club initially.
Cool.
So that you don't, you know, play the people you've always kind of played, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
It was a good little piece of software, so I got to do that. Tim, our glorious pundit, showed me how to do that.
Yeah, man.
Tim.
We love Tim.
He is awesome. He went pretty well. I reckon he went fifth-ish, maybe fourth or fifth. I can't remember now. Look it up on tiebreak. it was a good, successful tournament. I got a few games in, got to play a bit of... So I just took my smoke along. This was obviously if we were uneven, which we were. So I played Big Daz in the first round. We were actually getting to clock and we wanted to start round two. So because it was the bye anyway... we ended up finishing it up. I think it was 8-all. It was getting pretty close. Smoke into Estes.
Yep.
Which is pretty fun. I think Estes has got the advantage with her ability, but we have talked about it like on the last podcast. Round two, I got Eric with Morticians, and I've come to like that matchup. Just they're a bit squishier, so they're not going to come into your... All their models aren't going to come into you when you're playing Smoke, so I got a few little tricky... moves like Smoke doing her legendary and then moving the poison on Dirge, so basically killing Dirge at the end of her activation.
So you don't get the dark doubts.
Yeah, exactly. And you get the VPs for it. It's pretty good. I got to hide Smoke behind a forest so that Obulus couldn't see and do anything, so I hit Smoke with the ball at the end of that activation.
Yep.
So that the next activation, the next turn came around, I generate some momentum doing other stuff like Vitriol just beating face, and then Smoke was well within, you know, 18 of the goal, which is, you know, all you need to be able to basically pop out, sprint and then
shoot
a goal. Yeah,
as she likes to do.
She's pretty good. I think that one was 12-4, 12-6 possibly.
That's okay. That's respectable.
But once again, you know, this was more just a pick up fun game.
Mm.
And then I got to play in the final round Tyson, and he had the Ballista Engies. It was interesting because I'd never played this with the Smoke matchup to see kind of how two ranged Momentous Inspiration casters or captains go.
Mm-hmm.
And we played a bit of back and forth lobbing shit at each other. But I think, like you said, I think Tyson's played as much, so I was able to jank a few like crazy goals with Smoke. Popped the ball out, and then went in. I put Decimate and Vitriol on one side of the board, so that's generally most of my damage dealing. And when he came up, engaged with Salvo and Mainspring, I'd whittled them down with the conditions as they came forward, and then popped a cloud on both of them, and then Vitriol punches Mainspring twice, kills him, he blows up, does 3 points of damage to Salvo, and then she punches him one more time and kills him. So that was a pretty good
man. That's nice. Yeah, that's good.
So 4 points from Vitriol, that wasn't a girl. And then just kind of went back and forth. It's interesting, you find there are those games where when goals are being scored, it just ping pongs back and forth, and because we were both kind of geared that way, he'd managed to get Colossus around the side and in snapshot range that I think it was he'd got one goal, two goals. So that was 12-8, I reckon. And he basically, got a snapshot and a goal in one turn. I got two goals and those two take it. So, good little day. And
yeah,
I got to play some Guild Ball, which is exactly what I needed. So.
Yeah, you're back in the saddle.
Oh, yeah. Smoke's awesome.
Yeah.
I still can't wait for Vet Catalyst, though. I still think that's an awesome missing piece into, like, a beta side that, if someone charges in or tries to get in on you, that's a really good way of just killing stuff, so...
Man, my big takeaway from the games I played today and, like, the last few weeks of playing on Vassal is that JKR is a legitimate striker. Like, he's only 2-6, but he is going to get to the goal. And if you can set him up, like, last activation, first turn, first activation, second turn, he's generally going to be in a position to, score a goal for you and get a takeout. So you get 6 points, start of turn two.
And you've got because of the Back to the Shadows, I'm guessing.
And Back to the Shadows, so drop a trap.
He bounces out, traps whoever he was just punching in the face.
Yep.
And then he's sitting there and you hopefully geared it, that you've got the momentum to win the turn and score a goal.
Man, he's so mobile.
Nice one. So he's your striker.
Yeah, I'm sort of playing him that way.
I mean, he generally plays a bit on a wing anyway, doesn't he?
He so does.
He, you know, you want that free reign where he can bounce out to relative safety.
You know, and if you receive the ball, you're in a really good spot to be able to get him up there in the first place. He's exceptional.
Yeah, I found that. That was interesting. I mean, chatting to Tyson as well, like, he hadn't received the ball, and in our game, he finally did in his third game. And he said, you know, it makes a massive difference. And I reckon that's a bit of a learning curve. Trick for the young players early on, that if you don't receive, what to do to get the ball, or what you should be doing with your models. Because, yeah, he actually did a really good kind of multiple activations to get Colossus right around the side, whereas I reckon he sounded like he was struggling early on in the first two games of the tourney because he didn't know what to do without the ball. Yeah, and I think that's a pretty important thing to work out with your lineup is, okay, yeah, if I don't have the ball, what am I doing other than trying to get the ball?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's a good day, man. You did well. It was a good tournament.
Thank you very much. So, yeah, no, that's it. We'll be back on maybe, I think we're doing an interview next week, and then hopefully, yeah, get the cast out.
We'll have a chat to Byron the Bear Sanchez.
Byron.
Straight out of Tampa, Florida. Nice. So, should be good.
Too easy.
All right. All right, and we're back. So that is the episode two, and we welcome all comments and feedback. If you would like to get in touch, you can catch us on the Guild Ball forums under the Double Dodge post that we made.
Yep.
You can catch us on Twitter. We have set up a Twitter handle for the cast, which is at DubDodgeCast, DubDodgeCast. So we'd be really keen to get whatever feedback you want to throw. You can find me. I am Random Scrub at Scrub_random.
Oh my word, what a mouthful. And I'm at Stubby Holders, so you can catch me on Twitter, or yeah, like Dave said, grab us on the forums on Steamforge forum. I'm just Stubby Holders. So
yeah, I don't think we've got a Facebook page yet. I'm sure we'll get around to it.
I'm sure we will, but you know,
you can't have too much social media, can't you?
No, no. And, you know, we like people to get creative in how they sling their shit at us. I mean, that's just too easy on Facebook, so.
Yep. So if you want to send Campbell dick pics, you can do that via Twitter. Make sure that you glue little googly eyes to your penis. That's fine. And if you don't have one?
Yeah, be creative. That's what we're saying.
Yeah. So, yeah, I reckon we'll be back for episode three. What do you reckon, Cam?
I don't know. Give us a couple of weeks and, yeah, we'll sort you out for all your dodgy Guild Ball needs.
Right. All right. Well, that's me signing off for this episode. Thanks for listening.
All right. Catch you later. Cheers.
All right, mate. Bye.